You are listening to Icons and Icons, a Final Fantasy XIV Game Club podcast. This is episode 80, covering the second raid in the Shadow of Mach series. My name is Chris Taylor, my pronouns are he, him, and with me is...
Ryan Beatty, my pronouns are they, them.
What happened last time?
Last episode, there was a lot of stuff to set up. So, we met the adventurous sky pirate named Leofard of the Red Bills, his quirky crew, including his de facto handler, Stasia, and the brilliant engineer, Utada. In a race with their rivals, the Talons, and their femme fatale leader, Radlia, we led the Red Bills through a ghost ship that had been sighted by airships in the last few weeks. This ghost ship ended up being the Void Ark, an ancient colony ship designed by the ancient mage city of Mach, which was destroyed in a flood after the War of the Magi. The ship was powered by masses of enslaved Void Sent, who, sometime in the last 1500 years, had escaped and slaughtered all of their Machi evacuees, captors. At the head of the Ark, the powerful Void Sent Diabolos broke the seals on a massive sealed coffin that imprisoned his queen Shatak. He then began to destroy the ship. A walking, talking cat named Kate Sith, who was originally the familiar of a Machi mage, saved us from the collapsing Void Ark. When safely back on our airships, we watched Diabolos create a void rift in the sky and disappear into it with the queen's coffin. We begin this episode with a quest called The Weeping City.
Way better than Shat Hatch, which is how I pronounce it in my head when I read it. Two patches later, we meet Stasia at the platform to the Red Bill headquarters. She tells, like, this is how, two patches? That's how long I expect for it to take Kate Sith and Leo, and what's his name, to do anything.
Yeah, right.
She tells us they've been working with Kate Sith, the familiar who saved our hides from Diabolos last episode on a way to find the Queen's coffin. And I don't think we even knew we were doing. We're just fucking palling around in there.
Mm-hmm.
Things are getting more urgent as Void Sent have been sighted more often around the Sea of Clouds, but Leofard and Kate Sith are arguing about how exactly to locate the coffin, and so Stasia needs us to come be a tiebreaker. When we get to their floating base, she stresses that if we can't break up the fight, she's going to have to strangle both of them. At Stasia's behest, Leofar begrudgingly updates us. He knows that Diabolos is gathering his forces somewhere in the sky, but the sky is just too big to search efficiently. Not even eavesdropping on his arch-nemesis, Radlia, bore any fruit. Not seeing any other options, Leofar wants to go out and search what he can with the pirates he has. But Kate Sith sees this as total folly because of the size of the Red Bills, and wants Leofard to contact the other pirate gangs for support. That's fair. The Red Bills are four people, and by the time we team up with the other guy, we'll be six people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. Well, I mean, the how to find it becomes obviated so quickly that it really doesn't matter, which is just very the silliest hand-waving in the world. Leofard is frustrated because he's explained multiple times to Kate Sith that you can't do that with pirates. If you ally with them, they will find a way to screw you if they even agree to help you in the first place. Kate Sith is like, surely not every pirate out there shares your base morality. There must be some noble seafarers that we can ask. And so he suggests that we ask on the faith that some of the good ones will hear it and join us. Stasia turns to us and rolls her eyes because they've been in this circular argument for two entire patches. She personally leans towards not trusting other pirates, like Leofard is arguing, and asks what we think. No matter what we answer, Leofard either puffs out his chest to be like, yeah, that's right, I'm right, or sputters in disbelief, depending on how we answer. No matter what we say, though, Leofard then just says, because nothing we say can have an impact for more than one line, he's like, anyway, we've got a long road ahead of us, so I'm going to keep finding for ways to shorten that that way. He then tells us that the engineer Utada has been muttering about the Void Arc for days now and asks if we can help solve her apparent problem. Kate Sith, seeing an opportunity to get out of this argument for a while, joins us in the Sea of Clouds to meet up with Utada. He turns and scuttles out of the scene in a very goofy animation. Because this is one of the only notes I have.
It's because characters, when they have their turn animations, they have like reverse kinematics where they need to figure out what the animation is based on how far they need to turn. But his model's legs are so short, it's like 40 steps for him to turn in a circle. It is so funny.
It's so funny, just as he's turning in a half circle. And it's like, and his feet are also just kind of like floating above the ground when he's doing that. It's good.
When we meet up near the Void Arc raid entrance in the northeast, Kate Sith is already scheming to ask other pirates behind Leofard's back, but thinks maybe he should wait until we hear Utada out. Utada seems stricken with grief, with terror or grief, and Kate Sith asks what troubles her, and the game just goes into the one weird physical comedy note that it has, where we have the the over-animated slapstick where Utada's eyes water and her lip trembles as she stares more and more wide-eyed at Kate Sith. The camera cuts back and forth between their gazes, and then Utada rushes Kate Sith, and things cut to black. We hear what sounds like her beating the shit out of a cat, and then the camera cuts back on the camera cuts it back in on her wrapping him in a violent bear hug and lifting him off the ground into her arms. When she puts him back down, he stumbles around in a daze while she does a victory pose in front of him, and we stare blankly at the whole scene. Utada breathes a sigh of contentment and then apologizes to the poor talking cat. She just really needed to squeeze something warm and furry at that moment, and he stepped into her line of sight.
With that out of the way, Utada tells us what's wrong. The replica ecto-compass that Utada built before Radlia stole the original does not seem to be working right, since it's not pointing anywhere near where she thinks the Void Arc should be. She is confident in her skills as an engineer and doesn't think it's a fault in the designer materials, so she asks us to start thinking outside the box. After she explains that the ecto-compass works by tracking abnormal etheric signatures, Kate Sith has a eureka moment. The Void Arc, again, like we mentioned, was powered by the siphoned energies of thousands of Void Sent, so it is possible the compass was tracking the ether signature of those Void Sent all along and not actually tracking the ship itself. This means that the compass is now likely pointing to Diabolos, his entombed Shadow Queen, and their gathering minions. This pretty much instantly solves the entire problem of how to look for Diabolos, since we can just head directly for the Queen's coffin. We've got a new problem, though. Stasia calls Utada on a link pearl and informs her that Talon ships have been spotted en route to the Leofard nest. We all rush back to the Perek to potentially defend the Redbills.
Thank goodness this problem turns out to be the solution to this problem is to go where we were about to go anyway.
Yep.
When we arrive, though, the Talon deck swabs appear beaten up and exhausted, and Radlia is nowhere to be seen. The deck swabs plead for a truce and ask for Leofard's help saving their boss. Leofard is shocked that they would come here after threatening the Redbill's crew and stealing their compass. The deck swabs elaborate. They followed the compass heading without thinking and ended up in an old ruin crawling with void scent. A huge spider demon started knocking their ships out of the sky. Which I don't understand how. This boss doesn't have any ranged attacks.
She jumps.
Oh my god, can you imagine the fucking a giant spider just body slamming your mana cutter out of the air like the orcas?
Yeah. Fucking go ham on those yachts, Arachne. Yeah.
Radlia's two favorites managed to fly away, but had a front row seat to the massacre that happened to the ships that were grounded. If Radlia is still even alive, she's stuck there with no way back. Leofard listens in on the eavesdropping link pearl he put into the compass to confirm the story. And hears a staticky broken exchange between Radlia and her crew, saying they're after the Maki artifact, imploring them to hide. And then, a bunch of screaming. This is enough to convince Leofard that they aren't laying some sort of a trap. He has half a mind to leave Radlia to her fate, but can't resist the thought of a new adventure with potential for treasure hunting.
One track mind. The Dexwabs bow in gratitude and tell us that they left their captain in Yafayim Saltmoor near Mordona. Kate Sith is aghast. That's the location of the ruins of Mach itself. He fears the Void Scent could be after the Null Stone.
I'm going to save you a lot of lore jumping. The Null Stone is semantically different than the Undefined Stone, because the Null Stone represents there's nothing here but on purpose instead of there being
God damn it. Thanks, sir. Chris.
You're welcome.
Upon learning that the Furball knows something about what we'll be up against, he tells the crew to make preparations for the journey and brings us and Kate Sith into his chambers for a little chat. Once we're inside, Kate Sith insists on lore dumping before he can tell us about the Null Stone. The sorcerers of Mach got a hold of Void Scent in the first place by forcing them into contracts. The more powerful a Void Scent is, the more difficult it is to manifest in our world, so the sorcerers would open rifts for them in exchange for use of their power. As a failsafe against being tricked by devious creatures of darkness, the Machi built the Null Stone, which could obliterate any Void Scent who broke the pact into nothingness. Kate Sith believes this device is still buried in the ruins of the city.
Except for the guy we shoot it at, who comes back in the Endwalker patches.
Yeah.
I don't know if you realize that or not, but this guy with like the little fucked up shoulders sitting on the ball is the guy that Zero fights by herself.
Oh my god. God, you're right.
And jeez. I would only know that because I did both of those things this weekend.
They recycle more Void Scent than they recycle any other type of boss.
This is a named guy, and it's the same name both times.
Yeah, yeah, well, but I also mean that, like, both Diabolos and the final boss of this dungeon show up in Amdapur as well. Like back in 2.x. So like, yeah, they love to reuse named Void Scent enemies because it's like, ha ha ha, you didn't actually kill me because I cannot be killed because my ether is different.
Well, actually, anime glass push-up, when we kill them here in the source, they're dead forever. So this is actually a direct lore violation that they get recycled. That's why we can't kill Zero Miss in the source. Otherwise we never get a Jaya out of it.
Right.
God, dude, look, they don't give a shit about the Void, and neither do I. Let's be real.
Yep.
They don't care.
God, and that's it was fine. Potentially so neat, and then, but then it's like, Unu Kalhai sucks a lot also, so that already, like, inoculated me against caring about the Void a little bit.
And then we have those two losers that we don't remember the name of from the Crystal Tower. When you deal with the Void, you have to go hang out with Beak Lug, which everyone hates. The only cool thing that ever happened there was Purple Nero.
I like Becklug. I don't know.
No,
they're cool.
When they're not talking in a when they're talking in a non-voiced cutscene, it's fine.
Fair. All right. Yeah, that's fair.
Leofard interjects that it sounds like the sorcerer sucked as much as the void scent they enslave. Kate Sith replies, "When it came to the glory of Mach, the end justified the means." More importantly, he believes that Diabolos wanted to take the Null Stone before a mortal could threaten his queen with it. Leofard asks why such a valuable relic was left behind when the mages knew about the incoming flood that they caused. Hint, wink, wink, don't forget. Kate Sith responds that the flood was the reason they didn't move the Null Stone. It's kept in a structure designed specifically to guard it, protected by wards and guards. They believed the stone would remain buried underwater, far below where the Void Scent could reach it, as though they can't open portals literally everywhere.
Right?
They didn't predict the floodwater would eventually recede, turn into a swamp, and expose the city once again. And so he believes the Void Scent are down there, working on a way to break the wards. Leofard punches his hand and says that this is the kind of race to the artifact that a true adventurer lives for. Stasia lays out the plan, slip into the ruins and grab the relic and Rodlia from under the fiend's noses. With the information gathering meeting concluded, we meet Leofard at the airship landing to prepare for the raid. Like the Void Arc, we're on the advance and the Red Bills will bring up the rear. He reminds us to not let our guard down. He thinks the guardians, the mages left behind, might be more dangerous than the Void Scent trying to breach the ruins. By the way, my favorite thing about Trust with plot important NPCs who are there is when the one guy you didn't pick runs up at the end like, hey guys, what'd I miss?
Yeah.
It was way funnier for me because it was Astidian, because I'm playing Viper, and then in the plot, Astidian is just also there and never has anything to say.
Oh, that rocks. And then we start the Weeping City of Mach raid. So because we're fighting a bunch of void scent, that means that there's going to be a bunch of gaze mechanics and instant death mechanics, but they will permutate slightly differently depending on the boss and the phase of the boss, so you can't just treat them all the same. In the first section, we're making our way through the outskirts. The formerly flooded area around the city is now a marsh. We fight crocodiles and spiders as we make our way to the front gate of the city. As we get further in, thick cobwebs start to envelop the ground. The giant spider that grounded the Talon ships ambushes us, and we learn that it has a woman's torso just growing out of the top of its head. It's not like... like, the spider is a full-on spider that has, like, a head with eyes, and so it's not, like, a spider woman chimera. It's a full-ass spider, then also has a woman's torso.
Wood. Sorry.
And so this first boss is named Arachne Eve. In the first phase, we primarily fight her around her sides, since is continuing to do like miniature tank busters all the time, and then her conal tail attack gives us heavy debuffs. So mostly this fight revolves around webs and where to place them. Three of us get targeted with webs, and then we spread out to avoid being seized by tethers that we would then have to break through if any of us did get seized. Where we place these webs now doesn't really matter, except it sort of affects the pattern of the webs in phase two, but not so much that like you need to put them in a specific spot.
No one knows how phase two works either. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's fine. So phase two begins when she burrows into the ground, and three alternating ring AoEs make us run into and then out of the center, and then run away from the proximity marker that appears right afterwards. Arachne pops out of the ground and does proximity damage, and then pulls everyone up into the web that she has built in the sky. So there are two kinds of webs. There are stronger webs that we can move freely across, and then little patches of sticky webs that slow us down and give us temporary debuffs and DOTs until we move off of them. So half of us make a hole in the web by killing a little spider ad and then hack at the knots that are keeping the web up, while the other half of us absorb alternating physical and magic damage defense debuff orbs before they can reach the boss and buff her with buff her attack. Meanwhile, Arachne Eve just like a cast implosion, which is just repeated raid-wide damage, and so it's like the healers have to heal through it mildly. After the last support is down, everyone falls back onto the ground. Phase 3 introduces a gaze attack, a stack attack, and changes up the web mechanics. This time, the players that are marked with the web position the webs around the outer half of the arena, and then we all have to rush to stand on those webs once they drop, which becomes our defense against her final attack, a tornado in the center of the arena called Widow's Kiss that sucks in everyone who's not on a sticky web and insta-kills them. And that's the fight.
Which is fine, because the fight's basically like the boss is at 2% at this point. It's fine. Just done.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. When we defeat the Spider Woman, our path... I thought the Spider Woman was so funny there. When we defeat the Spider Woman, our path is blocked by a swiftly moving current. Seeing no other way forward, we jump into the current, which Kate Sith remarks that he hates. Now in the city proper, we fight through swarms of Maki ghosts and a murderous void scent that appear from dark spouts along the streets. We get through the Shitoto Memorial and encounter Forgal, a weird angular void scent noble that seems to float around sitting on a spider abdomen. We attack him before he can finish breaking the seals on the Null Stone Pyramid. This fight revolves around the zombie puddles that Forgal casts under three random players. Alright, here we go. Here we go. This is how I explain it to everybody. Green bad, orange good, lady ad bad, after that, green good, and that's the whole fight.
Yep. Yeah.
In phase one, we avoid the puddles so that we don't become zombies while running through tower mechanics, toad debuffs, and flaming line attacks. You have to stand in like the flame things, otherwise the raid wides get a little more powerful, but the person in them takes like some debuffs. It's like mildly interesting. Not really, though. There's three ads. We want to kill the succubus first, because the succubus will instantly wipe everyone. And then in phase three, we actually want to be zombified because Megadeth is happening, which is an instant kill to everyone who's not zombified. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
Yeah. He adds flame puddles to the phase one arsenal in phase three. One of the other adds that isn't the succubus has a gaze that will give everybody who's looking at him a doom debuff, but this is healable with Esuna. So not like unhealable doom. It's just regular doom.
Yeah, unhealable doom is what you get from reading online.
For real. Jesus. A bridge swings into place in front of us. We enter the pyramid and go through several jump pad tunnels and float down to the security door corridor where we encounter the first of the No Stone Guardians, a gigantic headstone. This fight has three lobes and two of our alliances stand ready at the left and right lobe while a third alliance stays in the center. It counts as a mini-boss, but there are actual mechanics to the mini-boss. So the headstone walls off the three lobes and summons void fires in the left and right, which our positioned allies destroy before they can burst, and then they kill the summoned add to then remove the barriers, and we all gather in the center again. We, you know, wear him down, and then later in the fight, headstone begins to cast an ultimate attack. Three of us retreat to the backs of each of the lobes, left, right, and center, and after all three of us are standing on one, that activates a shield in the center that everyone gathers into to protect us from the ultimate attack while we wail away at the headstone.
And it makes the fight take a really long time because your tank pulls it outside of melee maximum range from the shield.
Oh, no. Nightmare. And
you know it takes a really long time because everyone's still trying to level Viper.
Yep. We continue upward and find ourselves outside. The actual top of the pyramid hovers a few hundred feet above us, so it's, you know, it looks like the fucking eye pyramid on the dollar, where it's most of a pyramid and then a gap and then the top. But that means that we're outside, so the skybox shows a very intensely colorful sky all around us, and we take another jump pad up to a, like, narrow ring with three equidistant points that let us approach the center. And that's floating above a depression in the roof. A swirling psychedelic orb of reflective plasma hangs suspended in the center of the ring. And we're about to fight Ozma. But God. Not Eureka Ozma.
God, I want you to go do Baldesian Arsenal so bad. It is so cool. Yeah. Imagine this fight, but if the meteors are not dropped exactly in between the points, everyone gets instantly wiped, and then right after there are buttons that have to be stood on, and if anybody misses the button, the entire raid gets sucked out of Baldesian Arsenal.
Jesus.
Like, the numbers are out of control, which makes this fight... Like, this fight's extremely cool, but non-threatening. Now imagine this fight where the numbers are out of control and no one can revive.
Nightmare. Absolutely.
Extremely
nightmare.
Good. You would love it.
I would. It's just getting there in the first place seems so not worth it.
I'll help you out. You get to ride around on an Ozma. Everyone gets to tell you how cool it is.
All right.
This orb is actually the tomb's second guardian, Ozma. Ozma transforms between orb, pyramid, and cube shapes, each of them requiring a different mechanic. Orb makes targeted players spread meteors around the ring, because everyone in your group of eight is on the platform, so if the meteors are not as far away as possible, the damage overlaps on the platform and kills everybody. Pyramid makes us gather in the narrow ring to avoid line AoEs across our platform, while our healers cure debuffs. It also marks a few of us out with countdown timers that require us to stop attacking and actually sheathe our weapons to avoid instant death. What a good mechanic in there could be revived, by the way.
I know. Yeah. Fuck.
Also, Ozma does not respect tank aggro and shoots whoever's closest. So if your melee steps an inch closer to the tank, they get fucking just butt blasted by these
shit.
Lasers. It's so
amazing.
Good.
Amazing.
Yeah. Cube makes us gather directly in front of Ozma. Again, really funny with the proximity-based aggro.
Mm-hmm.
To avoid, like, an AoE ring the whole way around, you have to be right up front or right in back at the very last back. But you can't do that because it then casts Holy, which also does knockback damage, which is so funny. Because you could just fall off the edge of the arena and die. A lot's going on. After we cycle through the forms once, Ozma casts Black Hole and swallows the raid inside of itself in an animation so long that if you use your, like, go-off button, the timer is over before you get inside, rest and piss. Every time you lose, like, Mickey Osuishi to this.
That's so funny.
Inside of Ozma, we must pass two DPS checks before a wipe. And you know what's cool about this? And what's cool about this? When you ride the when you ride the mount, or in this fight, when you're in Cube and Pyramid, you can see another world reflected inside of it, and that's where you are right now. It's sick.
That's cool.
It's
that's
sick.
Cool. Yeah.
The first is a repeat of the Atomos from Alota, which is very funny, given that we do that every day anyway.
yeah.
Half of us stand on three platforms so that the other half of us can kill the Atomos Echo and the adds it spawns. The second is a shade of Ozma itself. We have to defeat it before Ozma's Doomsday timer goes off, which will wipe us. It will occasionally gaze at us, which can potentially imprison anyone looking at the Ozma shade too long. It also targets three of us with proximity blasts that we position around the edges to create a safe spot in the center. Once Ozma shade is destroyed, we pop back out into the real world for phase 3. Phase 3 is a repeat of Phase 1, but Ozma will randomly cycle between forms, and also, there's a timer.
Yep.
The timer, very close at BA. When we cleared, we had like 5 seconds left.
That sounds so fun.
Like,
so
real,
fun.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Okay, also, here's the thing. What if I told you that there's a huge dungeon with, like, adds that really matter? Like, every trash pack is, like, a real raid boss. And then, also, there are invisible traps that instantly kill anyone that steps on them. So, like, you have to have people who have, like, the true sight thing equipped so that you can see it. But then these people suddenly have less utility to everyone else. It's really cool.
Awesome.
There is a boss that goes completely invulnerable. And what happens is a fate spawns outside of Baldesian Arsenal, and it has to be killed so the boss inside of Baldesian Arsenal can be damaged.
Oh my god.
All these mechanics are like, your shit. It's so good. It's the best content in the game. Fun.
And it's locked behind one of the grindiest slogs that the game has to offer.
Yeah, but it's locked behind a version. It's locked behind another version of the game you also like.
Yeah, I know. I know. Mm-hmm. I know.
Got him.
I like Final Fantasy XI. God. So we finally float up into the tomb of the Null Stone at the top of the pyramid. Around us, enormous statues of warring gods stand locked in eternal battle. We ascend the ramp and encounter the final guardian, Kalofisteri.
I don't know why you fight this boss last after Ozma, by the way. It's weird.
It's such an anti-climax, and it's like the attacks happen quickly, like in rapid succession,
and they do a billion damage, right? Like you can just die from taking a circular AoE.
But even then, it is so much mechanically easier to get a handle on than Ozma is. And also, there's less spectacle. So, yeah, this is Final Fantasy XIV's version of an iconic late-game boss from Final Fantasy V, who's, like, one of Final Fantasy V's big archfiends. She's a blue woman with tendril-like hair that can turn into various weapons that will be the primary theme of this fight. So, Phase 1 sees her attacking both with wide cleaves and then something called Haircut, which is a half of the arena swipe. Pretty short cast time, but you still have enough time to run to the other side as long as you're not, like, at the other edge of the arena like some bards are sometimes. And also, there will be entangling vines that will insta-kill everybody trapped inside those vines if we don't cut them out of the vines quickly enough. In phase 2, she summons adds that have a spell that will go off, will end up speeding up the cast time of her upcoming raid wide, and so it's possible that we don't kill the adds fast enough, and the adds are still alive when she does the raid wide, which would also be a wipe. There is no official transition to phase 3 here. She just starts using her other attacks, and so those other attacks include... So she, like, puts chase markers down and It's a big circular arena, and so three of us just like go outside and just run in a big wide circle to keep the chasing meteors away from hurting people.
They have a really cool sound and visual. I love these fucking like half orbs all the time. Every time they're in, I love them.
Yeah, they're very cool. Also, some of her tendrils turn into flowers that are in the shape of an axe that burst in a donut AoE, and so as soon as we see those, we have to like crowd up near them. Also, sometimes flowers like fire out in two beams across the entire arena, and then her gaze mechanic is super weird in that if you're looking at her, she pulls you in, and if you're looking away from her, she pushes you out. And then she'll follow that up with an attack that you either have to be near or far for, usually far, so you usually should look away from her, but there are some instances where it's like, oh shit, actually, we do need to be close, which sucks. So yeah, like we said, the attacks hit hard and rapidly, but it's just to respect the mechanics fight. There's not that much to figure out, it's just fast-paced.
Yeah. After the fight, we look up at the glowing green marble in front of us, and Leofard and Stasia appear behind us. Stasia congratulates us on our monster killing, and Kate Sith approaches the marble to obtain the Null Stone. Just then, a weird chimera man with snake tendrils growing out of his back and a skull cackles and thanks us for finding the relic for him and carving such an inviting trail of destruction for him to follow. This is Ferdiad, who works for Diablos in some fashion.
Yeah, he's also the final boss of the hard version of Amdapur Keep, where we accidentally summoned him while trying to stamp out the Lambs of Dalamud, who were trying to summon him in the first place. Big mistake on the Warrior of Light's part.
The hardest working void set in Final Fantasy XIV, this guy.
Seriously.
Ferdiad tells us that he bought us a thank you gift, and the camera pans over to Rodlia, suspended in midair and tied up with bonds of void energy. He brings his scythe to her neck and threatens to tear her apart unless we hand over the Null Stone.
Kate Sith and Leofard look at each other and nod solemnly. Rodlia's face goes from scared to crazed. Leofard slowly steps forward and draws his gun. He scoffs at the threat, rightly saying, Rodlia has done nothing but cause us grief, and he would be happy to crow over her grave. Kate Sith starts to activate the weird like marble that the Null Stone is hidden in, while Leofard laughs in Radlia's face. The two pirates go back and forth while Radlia frantically tries to escape her bonds, realizing that she's not going to get rescued. Ferdiad tells everyone to shut up because we ruined his moment and now he wants to ruin Leofard's smirking face. Ferdiad twirls and leaps towards Leofard, who deftly steps out of the way and reveals that Kate Sith, right behind him, has opened the marble like suitcase and now wields the Null Stone staff. A brilliant light erupts from the staff as Kate Sith righteously obliterates the Void Sense corporeal form.
Renata Price voice, I want to ruin that twig's face. Ferdiad's disembodied voice growls that the show isn't over until he hears a scream. We collectively decide it's time to leave. Back on the Parox airship landing, Leofard congratulates us on a successful adventure, but yells at Kate Sith for lying about the Null Stone's destructive powers. After all, Ferdiad got away. Kate Sith responds that he hasn't begun to unlock the Null Stone's full potential, yet enormous jack-off motion. That was Seriously. Just a taste. Leofard rightly points out that a super weapon that isn't at full strength isn't going to be much help. We would refer to that as a weapon.
Uh-huh.
But Kate Sith points out that we were able to keep the Null Stone and rescue Radlia with just this tiny fraction of power. Leofard says, you're right, good job, thank God we got this one extra guy to hang out with us, and walks away, which baffles Kate Sith. We just shrug and smile at him in response.
And then there is one more quest that has no raid attached, but was part of the 3.3 update, and then the next one is in 3.5. I checked, and we don't need the MSQ to be up through 3.5 to do the end of Mach, so we're just going to run straight through the final
one. Imagine waiting 3 months, and this is what you get, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Especially when the numbers were more turned down because the eye level had not over-leveled the game yet. I actually think that this is a pretty fun raid. It's just, you know, it's
talking about this cutscene.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
You wait 3 months.
No, this is...
This cutscene comes in, and it's 3 more months.
No, that's not how it works. This happened right after.
Oh,
and
thank
so
God. That's what I thought you meant.
Got it. Yeah, no. Void Arc was 3.1, Weeping City, and then this quest was 3.3, and then the final one was in 3.5.
Thank fuck.
So, yeah. After all that excitement, Leofard wants our help in questioning Radlia. However, after the shock she's been through, she may be a minute sleeping it off. Inside Leofard's chambers, Stasia brings a now-awake Radlia in to talk. The first thing she does is demand to know if there were any other survivors in her crew. Stasia shakes her head no, with a combined look of sympathy and sternness. Leofard doesn't give her any time to grieve. He has a feeling Radlia knew more about Mach than just a random compass direction before heading for the ruins. Radlia admits that her men found a mysterious old book somewhere in the Sea of Clouds that mentioned both the Void Arc and the Nullstone.
How did you find
Kate
this?
Sith,
like, if it came off the Void Arc, it fell to, like, Ishgard or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Fucking stupid.
Yeah, very dumb. Also, they never mention the book when Leofard is eavesdropping on them, which mm-hmm. also seems convenient.
Mm-hmm.
Kate Sith wants to know if she found the author's name, but Radlia says no. Not only was the book enchanted with, like, confusion spells, but it's also 1,500 years old, and so the words might have faded a little. She throws the book on the table and tells Kate Sith to have a look himself.
Radlia wanted to wield the unimaginable power of the Nullstone to become Queen of the Skies, but now she's wielding the Undefined Stone. She's abandoned the dream that she couldn't even keep
God
her
damn
own
it.
Crew. Kate Sith, seeing an opportunity for an alliance like he always wanted, clears his throat and asks Radlia if she wants revenge against the Void Scent that killed her crew. Radlia slams her fist down to the table and says, "Of course she does. I didn't want these pointers to be unreferenced." Kate Sith responds that she should join the Talon Strength to the Red Bills to achieve that vengeance and make the skies free again. Radlia sighs and says that all of her best fighters were just slaughtered, so that all she has left are the D-string. Leofard tries to bait her, asking her when she became a coward needing a garbage-collected language, and telling her that she suffered a loss, but that's no reason to give up on the life entirely. Radlia doesn't bite. She knows that Go is okay. She gives us a sad, defeated look and leaves the book with us, tells us to make the best repay, and walks out.
Fuck off. There's so many fucking embedded jokes in there. That... Someone besides Chris and I is cackling at this, and I am really happy that that's you. But good God.
I am beginning to see how you keep running off editors with this self-indulgent nonsense.
If you liked this, listen to the season about Serial Experiments Lane where I got to go real sicko mode on it.
Oh my God, incredible. As we watch Radlia leave with genuine concern on our faces, even though she, like, sucks and is evil the whole time, we don't have to feel that bad for her. Leofard asks Kate Sith to decipher the book as quickly as possible so we have a chance of actually obliterating the Shadow Queen. Fucking scat hatch.
Yeah. Open wide.
Yeah. Gross. Gross. He tells the rest of us to go get stronger so we can really overdo the violence. As we depart the chambers, Leofard solemnly swears to decorate his walls with Void Scent heads if he has to. The skies should belong to no one. Elsewhere, in a ruined tower next to a giant Maki pyramid, hundreds of bats coalesce into a black orb that turns into Diabolos. He sternly crosses his arms and yells at Ferdiad for letting the Nullstone fall into mortal hands. As Ferdiad apologizes to his Dark Lord, Diabolos roars at the sky and declares that his coffin wife's power is almost at full strength. Soon, his desire will become a dark reality.
And then we get, like, a really dramatic pan over that portrait in Leofard's office, and then I don't care about it at all, and I'm making fun of it because it has, like, a bunch of spinning fans and gears. Why do you have a steampunk portrait frame? What is happening? Why does it need to generate and consume energy? What is this?
And it's not like the asset creators didn't have enough new stuff to make for this raid. So, like, someone was bored. one of the art team was bored. That is for sure what happened here. This is fun, and I like how low the stakes are. I like how focused the story is. Maybe they're gonna fuck that up at the end in the third act, like every other extra patch content in the Heavensward, in the post Heavensward stuff. But like right now, this is good. The characters are cartoony. It is following, you know, some very rote plot beats, but I think that it's like well animated, and all none of that would matter if the fights weren't fun. But like these raids, they're pretty fun.
Oh yeah, this is an excellent one.
Yeah,
it's really one of my favorite things is that Arachne is reused as a raid, a fate boss in Eureka, but not everyone, every party has a tank there, so they just get fucking turbo obliterated by the fact she's always doing cleaves. So funny.
Yeah. Jesus.
Great fight. Love it. Ozma, extremely cool. Really weird ordering of the bosses. What the fuck was that?
Mm-hmm.
Great content otherwise. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And the architecture is neat too. Like each biome feels distinct, where you're in the outskirts and then you're in the outside ruins and like everything is collapsed, and then you go into the pyramid and it looks like the Void Arc, and you're just like, oh right, yeah, the evil goth mage nation did build this thing. And then you get some psychedelic shit. It's just
not that evil goth nation. There's another evil goth nation.
Yeah. Fuck. You're right. God, what is it with Final Fantasy and creating goth nations?
We know what it is, and it's one guy, and his name is Tetsuo Nomura.
Yeah, and he's so horny for goth women. I
get it. Married. Look.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look.
Everyone, for real.
Everyone thinks Elvira is hot. It's fine. I understand.
It's true. It's true. Yeah. That's all until next episode, where we will be finishing up the Shadow of Mach raid series, and then
will Diablo shoot another dark load? Who knows? Don't think I didn't notice you said that.
I papered over it so quickly, but yeah, no, Diablo's is gonna
be so mad. She has to go back and put it in.
Fucking Diablo shoots his dark load into his coffin wife is also that's very Nomura coded right there.
What? I wanted to fill your dark load with light. Peace out, fuckers.
Goodbye.
But wait, there is more. Here is a bonus segment on our hosts discussing the new expansion in brief, with their first impressions. They asked for this. I left the part where they did in. Don't deny it later, you dare.
All right, Sybil, this gets to go at the end after a spoiler warning also. Anyway, Endwalker patches, very bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It feels like cut content. It's like, oh, in our Final Fantasy IV expansion, here's a bunch of ideas we had that we didn't have time to do. They don't relate to the main plot at all. It ties literally nothing up about the main plot. And, mm-hmm. like, no one was wondering what was up with Zeno's ghost. Like,
right.
You could have put this in the MSQ by just... What it feels like is it feels like we were going to do this, and then we came up with the end singer instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, like... To its most mild credit, Zero is not a bad version of the thing they've done a million times before, which is like introduce a character that's unfamiliar with the Final Fantasy XIV world and have them learn about humanity through learning about the Final Fantasy XIV world. Like they've done that worse before, but that like, come on, like that's not even faint praise. That's just, I guess they didn't fuck this part up.
All right.
It
was cool when she became a paladin, but also I've never been more excited for someone to have a class change just so she can lose the hat tip affectation, which I was way over.
She's very m'lady for most of the patches. I think the pacing is bad, and it's not trying to wrap anything up. It's like this secret other thing where they're like, hey, yeah, side story, in between the end of this huge patch cycle, or the end of this huge 10-year story and the beginning of the next one. I liked some of the dungeons, though. Like, for real.
Oh, that lightning bear might be my new favorite boss, actually.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, it's good.
I had several funny thoughts, though. When we get the backstory on Durante / Gomez, like, wow, Ryan's loving this. He's evil because he's
absolutely
sad.
Not. No. They broke me of that. I do not like Zeno and Durante.
Oh my god. And then the other one was at the very end when his dia is really small. I'm like, this is going to be the most awkward incest porn I've ever seen. His size and balance so big.
Oh my god.
It.
Help, step bro, I'm stuck in the Void Rift.
You know what really highlights to me is that the way they came up with a main plot for the MMO sucks ass, actually. Because what happens is that Heavensward and Stormblood don't matter at all.
Yeah.
Literally just only the Crystal Tower, Shadowbringers barely, only because we introduced the concept of Ascians, but really the plot is A Realm Reborn, the Crystal Tower, and Endwalker, and everything else is just stuff you did.
That's why it's like a couple of the yellow post-game side quests ended up being more impactful to me, because that's where you went and, like, you know, you go hang out with Leofard again, and you go hang out with, like, some of the people from Heavensward again. You go hang out in Idleshire again, they're completely missable, pretty inconsequential, combat-free cutscene side quests where you're helping who is the little Lalafell that fucking is part of the Scions who can't fight, and so she becomes a business queen. What is
Tataru?
Why am I blanking on her name? Tataru. It's just you're helping her build a commercial empire, and yeah, that's where I got some of my, like, oh, it's nice to revisit old friends feelings, and I got none of that in the main story, and it also those cutscenes were too long for just it's nice to visit old friends.
Okay.
Yeah,
you know what it really feels like is it feels like when you defeat Zodiark and you sever the big void connection, Xenos stops being a Reaper, becomes a samurai, you fight him, and then this is the end of the expansion, is what it really feels like. And instead, they came up with this other thing, and they're like, well, here's our cut content.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And even after they promised they weren't trying to make Xenos happen anymore, they still a little bit were trying to make Xenos happen, and I'm tired of it. And so, yeah.
And yeah, like,
I agree.
The entire thing with it can be fully summed up with, oh, and here's this dungeon. Don't worry, the Dark Elf is here also. Mm-hmm. We didn't forget about everyone's favorite, the Dark Elf. It's so weird.
It's bizarre. And it also kind of feels like a disservice to the 13th and the Void, which has been this background element since 1.0. And they're like, shit, we should really focus on that. So here's some cut content about it. Like, we should, like,
they should have done more or less by pointing two lasers from different worlds at each other, and that's how we're going to solve all of the problems. And now you can go do all. And like, the lead into John Trail feels so weak right now. I haven't done the final patch where John Trail starts, but really the lead in is we found a letter. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll be straight up with you. The pacing of the opening of Dawn Trail is the worst pace that an opening of a new expansion has ever been. You know, I have enough hours sunk into this game that I'm not going to give up, but I don't, it's, you know, it's 3 hours before you enter combat, but it's 3 hours of, like, just scrolling through a bunch of new informational cutscenes.
Yeah, it's because you're in a new place. They're a Realm Reborn dumping on you again.
Yeah. Yeah. Which it's like, have they not learned anything about how to pace a new expansion at all in the last 11 years?
I am more excited to level my Blue Mage to 80 and learn new spells than I am for the entirety of Dodge Hurl at this point.
Woof. Woof. Yeah.
Not gonna lie, I could imagine this being the last one I play if it's not very good.
Me too. I'm teetering, for sure. I've kind of stopped playing the game for myself and only play it for the podcast now anyway. So, and I'm really only going through Dawn Trail because I feel like I have an obligation to. And I hate feeling like I have an obligation to do shit. So
I haven't started it. I just finished that patch section yesterday.
I just hit my first like time where you actually have to fight something, which is three and a half hours in, and then I turned it off. So we'll see.
Music, okay. Is it better than that fucking awful title song?
Yes, it is better than the title song and the quest accept song. It is better than both of those. For sure. There's some good music, and I can see some of the characters being cool at some point, but right now, none of them are.
Let's talk about buck breaking, but for cutscene length. Because what's really happening is that these cutscenes are really long. It's just that I've been fully housebroken by how long they get later. Where I'm like, oh, these are reasonable. And it's like, I spent 30 minutes watching these dudes talk and emote to each other. Unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So far, I like Mach. I like this raid series. I think that the story is appropriately scoped, and they give enough like big cartoonish characters that I'm, you know, it's not a chore to sit through the cutscenes. So it's sitting better in memory, or it's sitting better in immediacy right now than it did in memory. We'll see if, like Alexander, they totally fuck that in the final stretch.
You want to hear something cursed? Remember I told you I had to run an alliance like 40 times for a pair of pants for a glam?
Yes.
It's this one. Imagine doing this one with all of the instant death mechanics 40 times.
Yeah, that would be brutal.
It finally got to the point where when my entire alliance would die on the mega death boss, I would just leave him dead in Cast Broil. It's fine. It's not that much slower. But it's easier for me.
It's so funny. There's been discourse in like the Final Fantasy 14 discussion sphere recently about how annoying it is when tanks don't let people learn new mechanics by just finishing the last 25% of the fight themselves after everybody dies, and how it's like, you know, this is boring for the other players and also is unhelpful because they can't learn the fight for later. And I'm like, yeah, but if I were a tank on old content, I would say fuck all that. I get being a little hurt by it for like new dungeons and shit.
I would say
for stuff like this,
trust.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Like, it's fine and fun to me that I died to Cognazzo like 6 times trying to learn that fight, except for the fact that the teleporters are after the bosses and not right before the bosses. That makes me want to fucking kill myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's what it's for. It's for learning the content and enjoying it.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. All right.
These are the right notes.